हरिः ॐ सहनवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा वीर्यविषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Everybody has one of these, or?
This is only for you, because this is just a recap of what we did in class.
So then just going back to what we were doing before this, so that we're up to date. Not that we're not up to date, but we might have forgotten what up to date means. So. Okay, so this sutra is 1 through 22. We have dealt with this pada majorly with the refutation task aimed at the Shankya school. They argue that Brahman cannot be the material cause because the world is completely different in nature from Brahman, right? Because they don't understand the cause and effect aspect of philosophy. It means you can see it there, it won't be completely the same, because if it's completely the same, it's the same thing, so you don't need two. So if there's two, that means there's some slight difference, but you can see the original in whatever is the transformation. Right? Brahman is said to be omniscient, all-controlling, pure, and joyful. The universe is directly seen to be full of ignorance, lack of control, contamination, and suffering. The difference cannot be disputed. That's there, but we see in nature itself, everything goes very smoothly. Right? It's the individual living entities, they're the ones that have the problem. Right? It is seen that the effect has the very nature of the material cause. Okay. Pot and clay, crown and gold, cloth and thread. Since it is possible for the world to be the effect of Brahman, the effect has the very nature of the material cause. Okay. Since it is impossible for the world to be the effect of Brahman because of such differences, one must search out a different material cause having similar qualities to the world. Right? Hence, they come up with Pradhan as material cause of the universe alone, since it has qualities, tamas, rajas, and guna, sattva, similar to the world. So, the world,
speaking?
Which...
Huh? Who's saying this?
Who is saying this? Who's putting this together is...
It's okay, but it's our philosophy?
No, this is the opposing philosophy.
Purupakshi.
But it's always good to just mention that. It makes it easier. Yeah? Okay. It's just like on the, what do you call it? The Bhagavatam, and they always mention when Krishna is speaking and when someone else is speaking. This time they didn't do it because that's the normal. Because philosophies are so close that you sometimes... So, basically what they're doing is they're comparing things that are obvious for them, are easy for them, and then saying, see, it can't be this. Well, if they compared other aspects, then they could see, no, here's the connection. Because they say they accept cause and effect, but only on the material platform. Right? Because you say about the pot and the clay, they understand that. But they're not looking what they're looking at, because they're looking at, okay, well, the clay is there, it doesn't break, but then the pot breaks, so they can't be the same. So they're looking at the wrong thing. You're looking at that the nature of clay, how it functions, how it works, then that is that is what is seen within the clay pot. But otherwise, so you have to choose the right elements to make the comparison. You can't choose the wrong elements. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like, okay, a cooked potato is soft, and the tire on the car is soft. Therefore, a potato and the tire are, you know, a potato is a tire, or a tire is a potato. You know, you have to know what to choose. But they choose whatever works for them, for their angle on philosophy. That's the difficulty. Does that make sense? So they've chosen the wrong connections. That's why, even though they'll bring up the aspects that we'll use to defeat the philosophy, they're using it in the opposite way. That's sometimes what becomes confusing, is that one verse, two different people will interpret it in two different ways. Or even they'll use the same example, same everything, and still come up with two different things. Right? So you have to know is, what are you comparing? That's the main thing. Yes.
So this means that we can interpret everything according to our own perspective.
Yes, that's the whole. That's how you end up with all the. So when we say that the philosophies, the six philosophies, those are the main essential kind of points. You know, they have a completeness in themselves. But then, how you say? When we go into the particular individuals, then there's so much variety you can get out of it, because you can apply one aspect, like let's say logic. Now logic is the goal. We can do that with just logic, but we could also be a demigod worshiper and get into logic, or into Brahman and get into logic, or, you know, like that, be a pantheistic or into logic, or be an atheist and get into logic. You know what I'm saying? So there's all kinds of varieties you can have even within. So these six main schools, then they have, basically you can say they have all the philosophical points in them. Mm-hmm. Now, how you use them, yes, and then you can put them together how you like. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing, according to your nature, your interest, your... So it'll be just like, because religion, when you're dealing with the material platform, it will be governed by your local environment. Mm-hmm. Like that. So depending upon what is the physical environment you're in, the weather that's there, the language, the food, all these different things, that will affect how you deal. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like, let us say, not sure if it's there in many languages, but in English you have an old saying that someone asks how you're doing, and you're, you know, saying something in a very light way, poetic way. You're saying, I'm fine as wine. Okay? So it rhymes and all that, and wine's good, so yeah, you're good, you know, yeah, okay. You understand? So now, who would say this? It would only be people who wine is a very important part of their like, you know, does that make sense?
Yes.
So that means it would have to have come from a European, Western European environment. Does that make sense? You know, if you know, because it doesn't sound good, I'm fine as tequila. Right? It just doesn't work. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing, is that it will be according to the local. You know, things like that, these have an effect. So like that, then you take these philosophies, these are, you know, main philosophies, but then you apply them into the local environment. Right? Because they're dealing on the mundane platform, they're affected by these. Does that make sense? The Vaishnavas, they're not affected because they're dealing on the transcendental platform. But it doesn't mean that they don't consider these things for application in the environment. But it's not that they're controlled or governed by these. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing. The Vaishnava is the universal aspect. And if you're dealing on anything below that, it will be governed by, you know, the locale and the customs and all those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. You know, to a main degree. Because you always have... A majority of people will function by that, and there's always the person who likes it somewhere else. Like one South Indian kid was telling me, you know, full on South Indian. And he was telling me he loves the South Indian breakfast, but he prefers North Indian lunch. You know, like that. You know what I mean? So, you know, there's always one like that. So it's just that there's some combination. So they'll take something from here, but they like a little bit from there, a little bit, you know. So it's always going to be that. Yes.
All right. So many times we see devotees do the same. They pull different things
right.
to support their own ideas or whatever it is. So how can we deal with that situation when somebody pulls different things and then apparently combine it like they do? It makes sense. It's not illogical.
Yes.
It's quite logical.
Yes. What's the mood? What's his actual ultimate purpose? Right? Because spiritual means its purpose is always going to be to please Krishna. And material means it's always going to please yourself. It's always going to have sense gratification as its core. So that's what you have to see. Are you dealing with pure devotion here? Or are you dealing with mixed? Right? And if it's mixed, is it progressive? Or it's mixed and it's regressive? Or it's an obstacle? Does that make sense? So it's like karma yoga, then we'll consider progressive. We'll call it bhakti. But karma misra bhakti, then we're bringing out the aspect that there's a problem. You're dealing with devotion, but that devotion is mixed with karma, and because of that, it's giving some problems. Does that make sense? So, you have to find out what's the mentality, what's the intent. So in other words, they're using these, what's the intent of that? Is it attachment? And so, because, means they have attachment, and you find loopholes, seemingly, and so therefore you can maintain your attachment. Or is it that you want to take up pure devotional service, but you have attachments, so now you've understood from Shastra how to connect those attachments to Krishna, so you get purified and move forward. Externally, they'll both look exactly the same. But you have to see which angle the mood's coming from. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That's the underlying thing that you're looking at. You know, how is it presented? How is other aspects of their dealings and all that. You know, does that make sense? You know, are there mundane symptoms of, you know, the political, the parties, or, you know, different things like that, or justice, or economics, or gain and safety, and these are very important to them, and they talk very strongly about them, then there's a good chance that their application of this has that mundane intent. But by them engaging in, connected to devotional service on any level, they will get benefit. But the point is at some point it will get stopped, because if you're watering the weeds and the creeper, at one point the weeds tend to grow quicker than the creeper, because we're used to weeds. We're not used to creepers. Right? So then the weeds will choke the creeper, though the creeper won't go away. It just can't grow nicely. You know, just like if you have... You planted some nice plant and you neglect it for a while. You come back and you can't even see the plant, and it hasn't. And then you cut away the things and it's still small. But as soon as you cut back the weeds and then, you know, plow the place, get up the roots of all the other things, water it nicely, then you'll see now it'll start to grow very nicely. Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of seeing that. But if you see the person's, you know, always trying and this and that, but they have their problems. You know, but they're always trying to do, and they're having this humble mood, and they're not fault finding, and they're like this. Then you can generally see as well in that context. Then from what you can see, there's a good chance that it's progressive. So in other words, it's also the angle you're coming from. Now, if someone is, let's say, discussing the platform of pure devotional service on the primary, and then this individual then brings up, no, but we can do all these things that are elements of engaging, you know, the senses on your, according to your conditioning in Krishna's service. But the presentation is on pure devotion. It's on the primary. You're not really focusing on the secondary. But it alludes to the secondary, and so therefore then being worried that their secondary position is being attacked, then they come up with, no, but in devotionals you can say this, Prabhupada says this, it says this here and there. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But now if someone is presenting, what do you say, you know, something more mundane, let's say, and then you come up with, no, but by connecting to Krishna we get purified and this and that and all these different things, then you might understand it's the other way. Right? But now you also have the aspect of somebody is presenting something very strong, but from the external, the secondary platform. You know, so very ritualistic. You know all the rules, the varnashram, this and that, and if you don't do this, you're in total maya and everything like that. Then if someone points out, no, but by connecting these to Krishna and this and that, then that might be pure. You understand?
Yeah.
So you can also see from the context that they're responding to. Does that make sense? So from different angles, then you try to see. But the main point is that if you view it from the primary, then you can start to analyze the secondary. That's what we see, is that we've gotten more into more analysis, we see, as we're progressing. Right? And that when we get into 11th canto, we'll see it'll increase quite a bit. So from the 7th canto, this aspect of the primary is the real thing, and the secondary is only support. That's been very strong. Well, you see, the first six cantos, even though it was pointing out this point, it was showing how to connect one's position to Krishna. Like Kardama Muni, he wants to develop pure devotion, but he has attachment to the concept of family life. So he's a good brahmachari. He turns to the Lord for this. Then the arrangements are there. They have Krishna conscious child. Then, or, you know, children like this, and then, you know, at the appropriate time, then he moves on for his renunciation. Right? So it's showing how that works, all the different kings in that, you're seeing how it works. You know, Ajamil, you know, and even he's gotten deviated into, because now you've learned that all these things done properly and all that according to your position, they can be connected to Krishna, but you might maintain that material side to it. You're not, means though the technique is perfect, you may be looking at it from the secondary as opposed to the primary. You know what I'm saying? You're attached to the concept, I can engage my senses. You know, it's about engaging my senses rather than I engage my senses in the service of the Lord of the senses. But, you know, it's going on, but it's more this, I like my baby. You know? Does that make sense? Yeah. So then we see with the sixth canto, then they turn everything on its head. Because you have Ajamil. Right? He's perfectly following Brahman, good background, everything. You know, Pukka Brahman and everything. And then he goes off the rails. And he goes off the rails bad. And then when they bring up, when we now, you know, we've gotten a little bit of background. But when the focus, what we're focusing on, is when the guy is over 88 years old. Because it doesn't specifically say how old Narayan is, but he had Narayan when he was 88. And it was a boy, so we, you know, there's some shock there. You know, that guy is enthusiastic. Like that. You know, so in other words, if he didn't die, there might be a few more, right? You know, so. Yeah. So, you know, the point is that it's right there. Now, it's already way over time. He's in a fallen condition. He's living with a prostitute. Right? You know, like this. All these different things. And now he's calling this name of his son. And the Vishnu Dutta is coming. So now someone who's gotten attached to the externals of piety, they're going to freak out with this. You know? They're going to freak out because it's like, no, devotional service is dependent upon proper mundane morality, right? Because bhakti is not independent, it's dependent upon karma, right? Isn't that the philosophy? Yeah. So if you're a good man, then you can be spiritual, but if you're a bad man, you can't become spiritual. You know, just like Dasaratnakar and all the, you know, that prostitute was Haridas Thakur, they didn't actually become spiritual, we're just being nice. Right? Isn't that the way it is? No, it's just, Dasaratnakar wrote the Ramayana, like that, which is celebrated today. And, you know, yesterday we heard that that's not from this 28th cycle of the yugas. It was from the 24th. Right? So that means, how you say, yeah, 1.6 million years later. No, no, excuse me, a whole cycle is 32.
40.
No, 32, right? 3.2 is the cycle.
43 lakhs. Mm-hmm. 4.3.
4.3 lakhs.
4.3 million.
4.3 million for one cycle. So that means 16 million years later, we're still glorifying it. That's pretty good, right? Yeah. Nowadays, if someone remembers you after 6 months, you're doing all right, right? You know. Is that make sense? Yeah. So we see is that the bhakti is totally independent. It does not depend upon morality. Someone who's situated nicely in devotion is moral, but morality is not required to practice devotional service. And so, those who have an attachment to morality, for whatever the reason, right, because it's a natural of the soul, that righteousness is one of the inherent qualities of the soul. But, mundane righteousness is always going to, is good for keeping you as a nice materialist, but it can totally get in the way of you becoming actually a proper spiritualist. It doesn't mean righteousness is dropped, righteousness is the natural thing that's followed by a devotee. But to think that righteousness is the cause of bhakti, it's totally mundane. I mean, like, totally. Does that make sense? So it's very important to be able to see that he's chanted the holy name. And when he chanted, he was thinking of his son. That's why he chanted. Then, from chanting, because he chanted his son's name as Narayan, from that you get purified. Even though he was chanting his son's name, the name still has purity, because Namaba still will give you liberation. Right? It won't give you prema, that's the difference, but it will give you liberation. So he became purified, then he remembered the Lord. Right? And then the Vishnu Vyutas came. So some may say, no, he's too this and that. You know, in other words, Ajamiya would not be allowed in our temples today. We would not allow him in the temple. You know what I'm saying? So, like that, is that there's a problem there. Is that this idea that mundane morality is actually the main thing, then gives rise to that mundane attachment, which means mundane sense gratification. Because karma means sense gratification. Right? And jnana means subtle sense gratification. Does that make sense? You know, you boost the ego. The other one, the ego's there according to your facility. At least it should be balanced. If your ego's bigger than your facility, even materialists don't like that. But if your ego's at the level of your facility, they may not like it, but they don't mind. No one can complain. And then if your ego's less than your facility, even though it's bigger than theirs, but it's less than what it could be, then that's that you're talking about a saint on the material platform. You know? Yeah. Just, you know. Yeah. So what here is that these subtleties to be able to tell what's devotion, because devotion means it's the primary being done to please Krishna. Right? It's about Krishna, but you're expressing that about Krishna through the secondary that are favorable to Krishna, but you're doing it to please Krishna. Otherwise, someone who's intelligent knows that Vishnu is supreme. And so, therefore, if I want anything mundane, I have to get it from Vishnu. Why would I get from the demigods, since they have to ask him anyway? And since the opportunity is there, I can directly deal with God. Why not do that? Does that make sense? Yeah. So, yeah. So then, we have to see what's the intent being used here. So that's what we're saying. This same example of the Satkaryavad is being misapplied to prove their material philosophy, rather than being properly applied. Right? Because you have to, that's where logic comes in, the syllogism has to match. So how they're putting it together, then it doesn't match, but there's other aspects that it does match. Because they don't have enough knowledge. Right? Because even you take their position, omniscient. How is nothingness omniscient? Omniscient means there's consciousness. Consciousness means there's an entity. Right? Because dead matter is not, you know, otherwise then they have to say it's in his own category. And if it's in his own category, Brahman, which is fine, then it's not according to the rules. You can't apply the rules of mundane logic. Then here, all controlling. But how would something that does nothing and doesn't transform control? Because control then means there must be some aspect there. Right? Pure. Okay, that's not going to be a problem. Joyful. Joyful means you have to be conscious to be able to appreciate. That's the problem. You merge, you become, then how are you joyful? You don't know anymore. You can say you become the supreme kind, but how does that work? The drop of water does not experience the joy of the ocean. You put a drop of water in at Los Angeles, you know, it's not feeling the waves over at, you know, Japan. The ocean is, the drop of water is not. The drop of the water, it's gonna, you know, it's there on, you know, whatever it is, Baja California, that's all the more it's gonna get. You know, it can move around, but it'll only deal with one at a time. The ocean gets all of them at once. Is that okay? So that's why we're studying these finities, because the main philosophy doesn't change at all. It's not that we're adjusting the philosophy here, or there's something new in the philosophy. No, we're getting more and more aware of the subtleties of the philosophy. Does that make sense? And then from that, then you can appreciate what's there. But in dealing, you still have to deal with the other person based on their perception. So that's part of the Vedic system already. But it doesn't mean that their position is correct. It's only correct how much it's supported by Scripture and how much his intent is in pursuance of the goal of Scripture, which is pure devotion. Does that make sense? So that's why you see is that much of the time when Prabhupada's introducing very strongly about Varnashram, he'll also show how Varnashram's not enough. It's connection to Krishna. But because it appears that he's supporting Varnashram and then saying Varnashram's not actually the thing, that, you know, it's contradictory, so therefore, you know, us coming from backgrounds of, you know, skepticism, therefore we'll take the fault. It's like if two people, one person says, oh, he's a great guy, and the other guy says, no, he's a rat bag, which one are we going to take? Right? So that's the whole point, is we'll tend towards that side. Right? Like that. Well, while the child, they'll take it, they'll go the other way. You know, but we'll say they're not mature in the ways of adults, you know. That means they're not materialistic enough, which is true. They still have the concept of personal and all these kinds of things, so. Does that make sense? So it's more natural to become devotees. So both of them have to be given so that you don't go off one way into karma or the other way into jnana. So then you have to keep that balance. That's why it's hard to tell our position, because sometimes we talk one, sometimes we talk the other. Someone gets too conservative, it appears we're talking liberal. Someone gets too liberal, it appears we're talking conservative. Because it makes the balance. Because the razor's edge is in the middle. Right, it's not one of those, new razors, you know, that's got like five blades or something. Yeah, it's just one in the middle. Is that okay? However, the Sutrakar proves the differences of cause and effect seen in this world by citing examples such as worms arising from honey, and elephants and horses arising from a desire tree. They next seek to the Buddhist theory of nothingness as the cause of creation, right? Because since within the Vedic, they've been defeated. So now they go outside of the Vedic to the Buddhistic, right? Like that, it's just nothingness. Okay, if you're saying there's something in that, and you're saying, okay, omniscient, all-controlling, pure, and you have a problem with that, okay, then there's nothingness. Right? Because this is something, that's nothing. You have to obviously say there's nothing in common. Right? Because that's what they're trying to show, is there's nothing in common, therefore, it can't come, the material world can't come from Brahman. But there's so much in common. And it doesn't matter that certain aspects aren't in common. Right? You have to know what is in common, right? So then they go to that. They next seek to the Buddhist theory of the nothingness as the cause of creation, which is disapproved by evincing that although the names and forms of the universe are asat, the universe essentially does exist as the energy of sat. Thus it is a real effect of a real cause. Right? So, if you're saying it's nothing, it's asat, but the point is it does exist there, otherwise why are you worried about it? Because technically, according to their philosophy, according to Mayavad and the Buddhistic philosophy, if nothing's there and it's all nothingness, why are you even worried about it? Because you don't exist anyway, so just, you know, what's the big deal? But they make a whole thing out of it because there's substance there. Why? Because the soul is there. Additionally, the particles as the cause of creation is vanquished by exhibiting that the initial action in the particle is caused by Brahman alone, right? Because then they'll go, you go take that aspect of Vaisheshika. So then the atoms are the cause of creation, right? Because then if Pradhan or this or that, the atoms themselves by combining and going apart and all this. But the point is their ability to go together and come apart is still the potency of Brahman. Things can't happen unless there's a potency to allow that to happen. You know, much of the time we look at the immediate and we don't look at the greater. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, okay, kids want to throw rocks in the backyard. Okay? But why can they throw rocks in the backyard? What potency allows that? Right? The backyard's big enough to accommodate. Right? Now, of course, kids don't really care if it is. Yeah. So now let's say they're in a closet. Now, can they throw a rock? No. Why? Means, can they not, you know, the rock's not there, rock doesn't have the same weight, the arm doesn't have the same amount of energy, is it like before breakfast so they haven't eaten their Cheerios, or, you know, what is it that they can't, you know, it's because there's no space. So the accommodating space is there, therefore they can throw the rock. So generally we leave that part out. Why is it that the atoms can function? Why is it Prabhupada, which is just a blob of, you know, just matter, why does it suddenly expand and transform? Where does that potency come from? Because otherwise a pradhan can turn into something. Why is it your pantry and your kitchen hasn't turned into all kinds of wonderful things? Right? You go out to the store, you buy your wheat and your, you know, your flour and your this and that and all that. And then you go out and when you come back, you open the pantry and in there's this big tray of baklava. Why that's not happening? You know, is it because you forgot to get the pistachios? You know, like that. You know, what's the reason? You know, so then if that's the gate, go out, buy the pistachios, put them there. You know, and then, you know, then come back and then you'll have. Of course, some may say, no, it's very slow. It'll take millions of years like that. And, yeah, and there's some that take that one so you can't work on the, you can't check it, you know. Okay, so this thereby proves Brahman is the cause of creation. So, in other words, they've tried to say it's Pradhan. That's the easiest. You just go back to that. Because we'll also say it's up to Pradhan. Pradhan from there, it's a transformation. But they won't go beyond that. Right? Because beyond that's Brahman, and they don't want to have any connection. But that's the point. Is it is the Lord's energies. Because they don't understand the Shakti Parinamavada. right? Because the original thing is then to solve this, then they got Brahma Parinamavad, but that's a problem. So then they'll have to come up with different Mayavad philosophies so that it takes care of the problem of the last one and creates a new one. You know, it's like modern medicine. It gets rid of one problem, creates another. After finding their every attempt been subjugated, however, still adhering obstinately to the erroneous concepts about the Creator, right, they finally bring up and entitle the Jiva as the Creator. Right, so they tried Pradhan, that didn't work. Then we just tried the atoms themselves, you know, from the Mahatattva, that didn't work. And so now, you know, nothingness didn't work, so now they're going to try the Jiva, right? Because that's basically what they have left. They claim that since there is oneness between the Lord and the Jiva has the capacity to create the universe. They'll see that oneness, and then you can do, but not the oneness is, you're creating this whole thing, you can't even, you know, get, you know, how you say, get your kid to stop, you know, stop, you know, stealing the cookies, you know, like that, and somehow or another you're the creator. But now you can't even do a small thing, or if you're saying you're creating, that's the one Jiva, so then if that's it, which one? You know, or because all of them are all one, they all create exactly in the same way, you know, like that, you know, how does that work? So, yeah, there's problems here. However, these flaws are overthrown by proving the Lord and the Jiva are unique individuals, and even in oneness, the difference between the two continues to exist. Hence, words like master show difference between the Lord and the Jiva, even in the liberated state. Because the Upanishads will use these terms. They'll always say what is above, the nityo, nityanam, chaitanas, chaitanam. You know, you have the greater and you have the minor. Like that, yeah? Although scriptures speak of oneness between the Jiva and Brahman, it needs to be recorded that it's not absolute oneness, since one who is the creator, Brahman, cannot be the created Jiva. Right? Because if he can be in that, why can't he be on with the material energy? Jiva's an energy, why can't he be with this other energy? So it's only we can be one with God because we want to be God, but the material nature is something different. If we wanted to control it, it wouldn't submit to our control, so therefore we don't like it. Right? And so therefore, you understand? So we're dealing with natural emotional reactions to, like, if something you want, you try to control it, you can't, then now you hate it. Even though it's what you wanted. So that's what they're doing, because otherwise they're at the final thing. I think this is the latest philosophy, is about the Jiva. The one that's more contemporary going on. So then, because yeah, from writing this is, you know, how you say, you know, would have been put together, you know, 5,000 years ago. Then Shankara came, he was first. Then there would be things, then Ramanuja would have dealt with things and would have defeated many. Then those who are more obstinate, then Madhvacharya would have dealt with. Those who are still obstinate, then, you know, then it's being dealt with now by Baladeva. Does that make sense? But the principles are always there. So, if the Jiva can do, you know, then if they're saying the material nature can do, that can't do, why can the Jiva do? And if the Jiva can do because he's with God, why can't Brahman do it? So you see, is they only accept parts of their logical equation. They don't accept the other aspects. Does that make sense?
Do they consider that Brahman is a greater Jiva?
Is the Brahman
a greater Jiva? It is what they
is consider? Brahman a greater Jiva? It doesn't appear that they do. But at the same time, it's kind of like inferred, but at the same time as it's not brought out. It's one of those, if you ask them, they say no. It's like talking to the Abrahamic religions. You know, is God a person? Yes. Okay, what does he look like? Oh, he has no form. He's in person. But is he a person? Yes. But, you know, so why is he looking? No, he's in person. Yeah, it's like that. It's going to be one of those. Because when you're dealing on the mundane, you're never going to get a perfect logical methodology. You can only get in the Vaishnava. But since we're so used to the mundane logic, then it appears to be logical. Is that what I'm saying? So, but it's not logical. So, yeah. Okay. Or, one who is the pervader, Brahman, cannot be the pervaded, Jiva. However, right, because if you accept that, then you could accept that he's creating the whole universe. Mm-hmm. Right, so they're accepting the one, but not the other. You know what I'm saying? However, the Lord is an exception to this tenet. Nonetheless, the jiva cannot create a universe in which he has to suffer, since this is illogical. Why would you do that? It means you're bored just being so happy, so you make the material world so you suffer, so that when you get back to being, you know, Brahman, then you enjoy yourself. You know, I mean, that's the, I think that's Shankya's philosophy. You know, so they have a problem. Brahman is not a jiva and has superior powers than the jiva. Hence, Brahman cannot be influenced by the suffering, contaminated, ignorant, uncontrolled world, though he creates it. Hence, Brahman is rightly the creator of the universe. Right? So the jiva becomes affected, the Lord doesn't, because he's beyond. It's his energies that do it. While the jiva, being energy, they get affected. Does that make sense? So the energy transforms, then we see the material phenomena. Okay, so then on page 73, Bhagavatam verse reference. Srimad Bhagavatam 11, 6, 15, and 17. You are the cause of the creation, maintenance, and destruction of this universe. As time, you regulate the subtle and manifest states of material nature and control every living being. As the threefold wheel of time, you diminish all things by your imperceptible actions, unless you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, right? So you see as the qualities of the Supreme, that's what you're seeing within the elements that are on the material platform, seeming on the material platform, like time. Then the qualities that are there, the ones that connect to the Lord, those are attributed to the Lord. And the ones that are connected to the material world, those are connected here. Does that make sense? So that's why when it's giving things and it's talking about jiva, because the Upanishads speak of Brahman as jiva, but as the Supreme, then we have to know is which ones are dealing on the eternal platform, which ones are dealing on a temporary platform. The temporary ones, that's to the conditioned jiva. And the eternal ones, that's to Brahman. Right? Because the jiva will always remain his servant. Because he is part and parcel. That doesn't change. Right? Knowledge is not the thing that creates expansion. Right? It's Krishna's all-accommodating potency. Right? So his achintya shakti, that's what does things. So he's able to do all those unlimited. We don't have an achintya shakti. I mean, sometimes we're amazed at how stupid we are. But, you know, that does happen. As the threefold wheel of time, you diminish all things by your imperceptible actions. And thus, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. O Lord, you are the Supreme Creator of this universe, and the ultimate creator of all moving and non-moving living entities. But by time, it's imperceptible, because it moves. How does time move forward? Right? Just in moments. You know, if you want to be really technical, we can't perceive less than a moment, but you see Bhagavatam takes it down to the time of sun ray to go over an atom, right? And then you triple that, you get 3 atoms, then they get 6 atoms, then it keeps going up until it gets to a nimisha, right? A moment. Like that. And so from there, that's time we can function with. Then it goes up to what we can do, and then after that, then it goes beyond what we can function. Right? So, being human, we're in the middle. So, the whole range of time is given from the atom up to Lord Brahma. So, that's complete time. Then you know time, but what applies to us is just from this nimisha up to means our lifetime. You know, so then we work within our 100 of our years. Right? Does that make sense? So we don't work by the Prajapatis, below the Prajapatis, the Pitris, you know, their time, or the demigods' time, or Brahma's time. Those times are beyond our time. Right? Is that what you're saying? Okay, so that moment, everything's moving forward in an 11th of a second. Does it seem like a lot of time that it's moving forward? No. And we can only perceive things in the present. So we're always there in the present in that whatever that 11th of a second is happening. But it's moving forward imperceptibly. Because you can't actually perceive things in the past or perceive things in the future. You can only perceive it in the present. You can think of the future, absorb yourself in the future or past, and that way even miss the present that's going on. But the point is you can only perceive the present, and it moves forward at 11th of a second at a time. So therefore, imperceptible time. We don't notice that it's passing. Right? Only if we have something to judge it against, then we'll notice. You know, it's like you sit and you're talking with a friend and the shadow's coming in one way into the room and you're, you know, having a good time and talking, you notice now the shadow's going the other direction. Otherwise, you wouldn't notice the time because you're just dealing in the present. That's why it's so nice. Then you notice time has passed, now there's other duties to perform. Does that make sense? Okay. O Lord, you are the supreme creator of this universe and the ultimate controller of all moving and non-moving living entities. You are Hrishikesha, the supreme controller of all sensory activity, and thus you never become contaminated or entangled in the course of your supervision of the infinite sensory activities within the material creation. Right? Because for him, he is these things. He's the controller of these things. For him, there's no taste in the mechanics of the of the senses. Right? They're not interesting to him. His devotion is interesting. But since we're not interested in devotion connected to Krishna, right? So therefore, what does that leave? It leaves the activities to express devotion. Right? Means you express your devotion through activities. We're not interested in devotion, that just leaves the activities, the knowledge and activities, the skills, the paraphernalia, the externals. Right? So that's all we have left. So therefore, then we will be perceptive of the particular reactions that are there and transformations within the senses. That's why we think sense gratification has something to offer. You know? It's just like, okay, let us say you have a a spoon, right? And you're eating. Now, if you put the spoon into the food, whatever it is, and the spoon is full, now you're inspired to put it in your mouth. Okay? Now, if you put the spoon into it and everything fell off, would you put that spoon into your mouth? No. You'll pick up some until it's full, then put it in your mouth. Right? But a baby, when they eat, they put everything on the spoon, right? And by the time it gets to their mouth, everything's fallen off. Right? But there's still a little bit of flavor on there, from, what was stuck on there. And then that gives a transformation of the senses, and they go, nice. Because they don't know the process of nourishment. Do you understand? Somebody said? So, because this doesn't, it doesn't have the substance. Then you take it even a step further. Then, having licked it off, put it in your mouth and pulled it out of your mouth, you won't put it back in your mouth again. Right? And the baby won't. They'll stick it back in whatever it is and then drop it on the floor again and or on themselves or whatever it is. And that, and then like that. Yeah? But now that you've had it in your mouth and that it hasn't been washed, a dog will lick it. Why? Because they have a more sense. They can catch the little subtleties of what's there. just because it gives them transformation. You know what I'm saying? So that's what we're doing. That you know, proper eating, that's what goes on in the spiritual world. The material world is that varying degrees of, you know, just the little bit of fragrance or taste is kind of there that from the mechanical point of view. And we're thinking, oh, this is so great. Wow, it's actually been a spoon that's been in the food and not licked yet. Wow, not, you know, like that. You know, here's a, you know, it's just like, you know, winning $1 billion. You know, it's like, hey, you know, we're the man, right? You know, so while everybody else has already got the lick spoon, you know, like poor slobs, you know, like that. So. Yeah? No?
Okay. But we have the feeling it is close to the finish.
Yes, but it's only the mechanics that are used actually in happiness.
But they can give some happiness, the mechanics.
They can give some, but in compared to what you can get, yes. You know, it'll be like this. Okay, let us say, for example, we take out something you really like to eat. We take out, you know, whatever it is, you know, a big amount of. And then, you know, I say, are you interested? And you say, yeah, I'm really hungry and all that. Then I get, you know, I go into the kitchen, get one of my, you know, how you say, $200, you know, really sharp Japanese, you know, kitchen knives, and go to it and cut this super, super, you know, you can translucent thing off of it, and like that, and then, you know, put that on, and then hand that to you. You know, and that's your quota. And then, you know, everybody else is going to get, you know, a regular sized chunk. Are you going to be good with that?
Better than the scene.
Yes, that is there. But the point is it's not better than something. So because Krishna can afford to choose, because it's either Atmarama or Rasa. He doesn't have to pick mundane. So even though he controls them, he's all that. That is not of interest to him. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say, you redid your walls in your house. You know, so you might come up and touch the wall and go, okay, that's nice. You know, it's smooth. There's things like that. But it's not that it's inspiring. It's just that that's what it should be, right? Because it's smooth for the effect of what it is, then you're going to be looking at it, friends, and this, and what effect it'll have on the whole thing. It gives a certain effect on the room. Okay, but you touched it. You know, it means that fingers are experiencing, the skin is experiencing, the let's say in this case, the smoothness of the walls. Okay? Right? Okay. Now, let's say, then you have your program. People come over and all that. But now, let's say before this program, one of the invitees has been, you know, partaking of other, how you say, ingredients that would somehow or another enhance their senses and everything like that. They'll go over and, you know, oh, you read it, wow. They get totally, wow, you know, just completely, it's a whole thing for them. But how much are you getting from touching a wall? So we make it into this big, fabulous thing, but in reality it's not. It's the program that goes on in the room. Well, this other person can just touch the wall. They can't actually take part. Right? They're too spaced out. They probably even can't even walk over there properly. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing, is that in this need for, how you say, experience, the living entity having neglected the Lord and chosen the external activities, then there is something in there, because Krishna being rasa, that means everything expanding from him, there's some rasa in it. But it won't be the same as if you're interacting with the Lord. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the whole thing. Yes, there is some experience of the senses. But even that means, yeah, but it's not, it can't compare to devotion. And even we say, no, but it's something. But that's something for you. The next person doesn't like it. The same experience that they don't like. You know, someone else goes, wow, there's no texture. I like some texture. It's too smooth. You know, it's plain. I like some, you know. You know, saying so. Whatever it is that you say is giving sense gratification in a positive way, someone else will say it's negative. The exact same thing. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing. So it's bad. You know, it's just like the one guy, he likes the new Rolls Royce because on the, you know, you know, the sportier models, then the front door is open, so it's a suicide door. So that's very different. They haven't used suicide doors for, I'm not sure when, it was 20s or 30s they stopped using it. You know suicide door? They open the opposite of the doors we use. See, it's like, you park on, let's say, you're driving on, what, the right side of the road? Yeah. Yeah, it just matters. Whichever side, let's just take for example here. You drive on the right side. Where do you park? On the right side. Yes. Now, if you open your door and somebody comes from behind and they didn't see you open the door and they hit the door, what will happen to the door? Yes. They'll knock the door off. Yes. Nothing will happen to you unless you happen to be standing right there. But if you just happen to open the door and let's say just stuck your leg out, yes, you know, just started out, it'll knock the door off. It won't be the highlight of your day, but, you know, you're still there. Right? But now, it's actually harder to get in. You ever notice this? It's not easy to get into a car. But now, originally they had suicide doors, which they call them suicide, because they open the other way. It's real easy to get into the car. I mean, actually much easier, because what do you want to put into the car first, right? Your foot. But the way they open now, it's like the foot's way up there, you know. I mean, so if you turned around, sat down, and then swung your legs around, the modern doors would be fine. But the other way, it opens so the front's there, you put your feet in first, and then you slide back, right? Does that make sense? But what's the problem? Now, if you open that door, and someone comes from behind and hits it, it closes on you. So it closes on your foot or head or whatever is happening on. That's why they call them suicide doors. Right? So, yeah? But in these high-end cars, they're starting to bring them back. Not in normal cars. They're in the really, you know, really luxury cars. Not even luxury sports cars. You know, those just, the doors go up sideways or something like that. But they open the other way. Right? So, because why? Where do they park? Do they just park in the street right there in front of the 5 and 10? No. Right? That's they're going to be parking someplace, or it's valet parking. You know, there's no one there. It's not going to bother them, you know. Yes. So then they can afford to do that. But now the normal guy, so they'll think this is really nice. But now a regular guy, he will say, this is not nice. It's too dangerous and this and that. And you know how the mirror is on the door? You know, so when you open it, it's there, you know, just next to, you know. But if it's on the suicide door, it goes out. It's all the way out there. So if a guy comes by on a bicycle and knock your mirror off, you know, so this is stupid. Who designed this? You know, like that. Yeah, but it wasn't designed for you. So that's the thing. For one person, it's a great convenience and very nice and unique and special. And for someone else, it's a complete annoyance and dangerous. So that's the thing. Whatever it is that one person says great, another person will says is not. Because it's just a matter of, if I say obtaining a particular mechanical transformation of the material world that gives a sensual result is good, when I get it, I'll say it's good. Mm-hmm. Right? But that's why then, you know, you understand? And then if I don't get it, I'll say this bad, but still what I want is good is good. But then the problem is that you don't know how it'll work. You know, it may be good, may not be good. Right? Because otherwise, if you do happen to have the good enough karma to get that, and enough times in a row, then you find out it's not so great. So that's why the Vedic system then has what things you should do as a human being. One, you get a human experience.
And two, because you're dealing in a pious way, it's something you can sustain. Does that make sense? And because you can sustain it, you're regularly getting that interaction of the senses. So then you'll start to see is that there's nothing really there. Does that make sense? So then one turns to what's above that, what's higher. Right? So if you're less intelligent, means you're intelligent enough to be pious, but less intelligent, then you'll think, oh, okay, this place is not, if I go to heaven, then everything's much greater. So then you'll notice it. You know, over there, then, they don't use a Japanese knife to cut it off, they use a fork, so you get a much bigger piece. Right? Like that. And so that. Or more intelligent than that, and you think, get out of the material world. Liberation will be. But if you're actually real intelligent, it mentions actually intelligent or real intelligent or the intelligent, then you understand about spiritual service to the Lord. Right? So that's why the Vedic system has it that the senses are engaged according to regulation so that you actually get the results and you can compare the results. Because also if you get the results too often, you can't compare. You know, it's just like if you have, okay, after Mangalartik, then you had a piece of lasagna. Then for breakfast, you had some lasagna. Then for lunch, you had some lasagna. Then at 4 o'clock in the afternoon with your tea, you had some lasagna. Then the evening, you know, kind of like supper, you had lasagna. And then your late night snack, you had a lasagna. And then in the middle of the night when you got up, you took two pieces of bread, put a piece of lasagna in and ate that. Now, would you be able to actually compare the experience? No. So that's why it's regulated. Because otherwise, then you'll just reject this and now do it with something else. Now leftover pizza in the morning like that. Now, okay, that doesn't work. Leftover pasta, that doesn't work. Then, you know, whatever you take and try to do that, you'll burn out.
That's more than a diet.
That's the modern diet. But the advantage is when you burn out, you could take up the spiritual. But if you don't catch it that window, then they'll find something new. So you have to get it between the lasagna and the pizza. Then only then. So if anyone wants to know where does the opportunity of spiritual life lie? It's between the lasagna and the pizza. Definitely people go, what? What are you talking about? Unless he's telling Italian. Then we go, I knew it all along. I knew it. So, you know. Yeah. So, the Vedic thing is that the more intensity there is, the greater, the more regulation there is, so the farther apart there is, so that you can come back to a regular mentality where then you can start to judge it. So it's very scientific. One can say, oh, it's restrictive in that. Yes, it's restrictive for the point of so that you have self-realization. But the modern, it may not be restrictive. In areas that are necessary for self-realization, they won't be restrictive. Right? But they'll be restrictive in other areas. You know, it's just like the kids. Okay, they were playing ball, and they hit the ball, and, you know, it went through somebody's window. And, you know, well, that was exciting. So now, okay, it happens. And we'll accommodate that it happens, so be careful, don't do it again. Or, you know, if it's something they regularly do, then, you know, every couple of, you know, so many weeks or a couple of times a year, then, you know, you might tell their parents they've got to pay for the window. Right? But now if the kids go, wow, that was great, and now they take the ball and start hitting through every window on the whole apartment building, you know, just because, you know, it was a nice feeling, now will the society allow that? No, because their sense gratification is getting in the way of your sense gratification. Right? Does that make sense? But now, if it's something that's no one else is connected to in that, somehow or another, if you went out into nature and there were just windows all over the place out in the jungle, and you went there and, you know, threw rocks through all of them, no one would care. Yeah. Except for the guy who's figured out he can make business off of bringing those windows in and selling them to the people in the apartments.
So that's the origin of Buddhist philosophy. If we hit the window in the forest and nobody was there, so it's not broken.
Yes, not broken, yes. So you, yes, even better, right? You know, then you can break all the windows, but they're not broken. Yeah, so You understand? So we don't care. So it's a matter of we define what is okay and what's not. So it's not that we don't regulate society, but we regulate it for sense gratification. While the Vedic regulates it for self-realization. That's the difference. But this idea is that, oh, that's regulated and we're free. There's no question of being free. It does not exist. If you live on a mountain someplace completely off the grid and you're self-sufficient out there and never have to come into the and meet people at all, you're independent. You know, like that tribe, you know, these tribes that are out in the Amazon or someplace that still haven't bumped into anybody. They're independent. Everybody else is dependent. And the more sophisticated, the more dependent you are. Right? You know, it's like here, let's say we're in Mayapur. You want to talk to somebody. Okay? So if we go back, you know, let's say a few years, then, you know, they're over at the, you know, they'll be there for Darshanarthi. You walk over there and meet them there. Right? That's independent. But now you have a phone, which is so much more convenient. But you're dependent upon that phone working, the being charged. That means the electric company. You're dependent upon the towers that are there, all their things. You have to have the money for that. You know, so many things. It appears that it's so much more independent, but actually you're more and more dependent. But by Maya, you don't see this. So that's the point: is that human society means there'll be regulation. Any society, even you have cats. Cats will only do cat stuff. They don't do dog stuff. You know what I'm saying? It just doesn't happen. You don't see a cat chewing on a bone. Right? The cat will chew until it gets to the bone. And when it gets to the bone, they stop chewing. And dogs will come along and start with the bone and start chewing. Cats will not do that. You know, you take a ball, throw it. The cat will not run after it. You know, it's not going to happen. So the whole point is they're regulated. That's why they're cats. Because of the regulation, that's why they're dogs. So human society, they're going to regulate themselves. Right? So it's just a matter of what is their purpose. Does that make sense? So that's all that we're dealing with. So the Vedic, it controls so that you understand, self-realization. Well, the modern controls to allow sense gratification for everybody. Right? And because it's a little controlled, there's a little interest. But in areas where it's not controlled, then they lose interest. Or they get addicted and stuff like that, and they can't actually, they're getting no happiness out of it. Right? Does that make sense? You see, for someone who's addicted to something, generally you see the picture before and after. They don't look very good after. You know. But if this thing is giving such happiness, that why aren't they happy? You know. So that's the whole thing. Is that? But because it's based on sense gratification, then they just shift from one to the next to the next. While in the Vedic thing, you have knowledge along with this, so then you start to see it's not this, and then the shift is actually progressive. It's not sideways. Right? Means if there's a change and it's going forward, then that's considered progressive. If it's going sideways, it's not progressive. Like in economics, you say the market is going sideways. It means it's doing nothing. No one's making any money. You're not losing, but you're not gaining. You understand? So just going for, you try this for sense gratification, that doesn't work, you try the next one, you try the next one, you just keep going. It's just going sideways. You make no profit. So the Vedic is that, yes, you go into the environment of sense gratification, but the regulation, then you start to see there's nothing here, then you progress to vanaprasth. It's progressive. You understand? And then from life here, then you progress to the spiritual world. That makes sense. So, all societies are so this whole thing, oh, it's restricted, it's archaic, and all that. Yes, it's archaic. If progressing and going back to Godhead is not your idea, then yes, it's archaic. But the thing is, the sense, the soul is eternal, the Lord's eternal, the relationship is eternal, bhakti is eternal. Therefore, it's not archaic. Right? And with sense gratification, since they have to keep going around and around in circles to get variety, because you get tired of one thing, therefore they have the sense of it being old. But in the Vedic sense, it's not old. It doesn't get, because of the regulation. It's proper use. And it's quality material. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So it still works. On the other hand, other living entities, even yogis and philosophers, are disturbed and frightened simply by remembering the material objects that they have supposedly renounced in the pursuit of enlightenment. Right? They scare them because they have that, by Maya, they have that potency of attraction. And what's that attraction? Krishna. So in other words, Maya is attracted because of Krishna. And so if through Maya there's so minimal experience to be gained that's nice because of that not having the primary aspect, right? Just the mechanics of the secondary. So now if you add in the primary, now it's nice. And so if the primary is what makes it, is Krishna, why not just turn the attention to Krishna? And so then whatever things are recommended for your position to engage in the Lord's service, that's what you deal with. Otherwise, you don't bother. Does that make sense? So things that are unnecessary, you give up, and things that are all right, then you accept. Getting that boring.
If you cannot do that, means it's like the desire to be the Lord. If you cannot do that, it's like
yes. Because that's the whole thing, is we're competing with the Lord. And when we give that, that's why it says surrender. Surrender means we stop competing. Okay. Next. The Sutrakar indicates that the next two sutras prove the jiva's lack of independence.
Footnote.
Oh, there. I was looking down here. It says BS chapter 2, part 1. Okay, yeah. I see. Oh. Okay. Footnote's quite big. The BBD purport explains the power of time, the energy of the Supreme Lord influencing the minutest detail of the creation, except the Lord. Power of time. Oh, it means time is influencing the minutest detail of creation, but not the Lord. Okay. The word gabhira raya, or imperceptible speed and power, is significant. We observe that by the laws of nature, all material things, including our own bodies, gradually disintegrate. Although we can perceive the long-term results of this aging process, we cannot experience the process itself. For example, no one can feel how his hair or fingernails are growing. We perceive the cumulative result of their growth, but from moment to moment, we cannot experience it. Similarly, a house gradually decays until it is demolished. From moment to moment, we cannot perceive exactly how this is happening. But in the course of longer intervals of time, we can actually see the deterioration of the house. In other words, we can experience the results or manifestations of aging and deterioration. But as it is taking place, the process itself is imperceptible, right? Because it's just going from moment to moment. But if you look back over many moments, then you can see. Right? This is the wonderful potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in this form of time. Right? Completely destroying everything, but doing moment by moment so you don't even notice. Right? The word tri nabhihi indicates that according to astrological calculation of the sun's movement, the year can be divided into three sections. Those represented by Aries, Taurus, Gemini, and Cancer. Okay, then Leo, Virgo, Libra, and Scorpio, and Sagittarius, Capricorn, Aquarius, and Pisces. The word Uttama Purusha, or Purushottama, is explained in the verse, explained in the Bhagavad Gita 5.18. Yasmat Sharam Ati Toham Aksharad Api Chotamam Chotamaha Atosmi Loke Vede Cha Pratita Purushottamaha. Because I am the transcendental, I am transcendental beyond both the fallible and infallible. Because I am the greatest, I am celebrated both in the world and in the Vedas as that supreme person. So when it says in all times here, it means in all these three times of these sets of zodiac signs. Because they cover everything, right? And then from there you break those down and everything like this. The Supreme Lord Krishna is within the heart of every conditioned soul and guides the living entity in the pursuit and experience of sense gratification, right? They want something. Krishna guides them how to do that. They can't even figure it out themselves. The disappointing results of such activities gradually convince the conditioned soul to reject material life and surrender again to the Lord within the heart, right? That's the purpose of the Vedic system. Lord Krishna is never affected by the futile attempts of the living entities to enjoy this material illusory energy. For the personality of Godhead, there's no possibility of fear or disturbance, right? It's not that when the baby is eating that mashed up prunes, or that mashed up carrots with nothing in it, that the adults think, ooh, that looks good. Right? So it's like that. Even though Krishna's arranging for the living entity, he's not interested. Right? For the personality of Godhead, there's no possibility of fear or disturbance because nothing is ultimately separate from him. Right? So, because it's not separate, he's not going to be afraid of himself. So unless you're Dr. Strangelove, you're not afraid of your arm, right? It's just there. Right? It's not a problem. You use it to get done what you want. Others might be afraid, but you're not. So, because everything is him, what's to be afraid of? Right? He's nice. Because we don't see it connected to him, we don't know what it is, therefore. Right? Yeah?
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinda ki, Jainatai Gaur. Thank you.